This podcast includes information provided by the issuer and does not express the views of the interviewer. This podcast may also include forward-looking statements by the issuer that involve certain risks and uncertainties to its business. Because forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties, the issuer's actual results could differ from those indicated in this podcast. Welcome to the Planet Microcap Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Kraft. Thank you all so much for the support and for tuning in to the Planet Microcap Podcast. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Bobby K. Kraft. That's BobbyKKraft. You are listening to episode 10 of the Planet Microcap Podcast. Before we get started with our next interview on the Planet Microcap Podcast, I wanted to catch you up on what we featured on StockNewsNow.com recently. We have articles highlighting video interviews with the following companies: Quantum Materials Corp, QTMM on the OTCQB, Great Panther Silver Limited, GPL on the NYSE market, and GPR on the TSX, Biomark Diagnostics Inc, BMKDF on the OTCQB, Sinata Therapeutics Limited, CYP on the ASX, or Genesis Inc, ORGS on the OTCQB, Flex Power Holdings, Inc., FLUX on the OTCQB, Richmont Mines, Inc., RIC on the NYSE market, and RIC on the TSX, and Abeona Therapeutics, Inc., ABEO on the NASDAQ. We also published articles from the Microcap Review Magazine, Summer Fall 2015 issue, Microcap Stock Selection by Fred Rockwell, and The Roller Coaster Ride of Clean Tech, What a Rush by Darren Ang. Companies that were profiled included High Power International Inc., HPJ on the NASDAQ, Sino Global Shipping America Limited, SINO on the NASDAQ, and Provectus Biopharmaceuticals Inc., PVCT on the NYSE market. For this episode of the Planet Microcap Podcast, I spoke with Scott Felsenthal from unusualstocks.net. The reason I started this podcast was that I wanted to have the opportunity to learn from other microcap investors' experiences investing in microcaps. When talking to Scott, we learn how he developed his microcap investing strategy while also working full-time in his family business. His interest in microcap investing led him to starting his own newsletter called unusualstocks.net, which he launched with fellow microcap investor Matthew Diodaria. The goal for this episode is, while it feels good when you make the right investment decision, it's even more critical to learn from your failures, which can help shape your microcap investing strategy. Thank you again for tuning in to episode 10 of the Planet Microcap Podcast. Please enjoy my interview with Scott Felsenthal from unusualstocks.net, but first, a word from our sponsor.
A comprehensive streaming of market data, research, and portfolio management application for you. QuoteStream is a real-time streaming quotes and research system designed for the day trader, retail investor, institutional investor, both new and old. QuoteStream offers low latency, tick-by-tick data, advanced charting, comprehensive technical analysis, news, and research. With no software to install and no servers to maintain, QuoteStream is the ideal solution for you. Go to StockNewsNow.com and start your free 7-day trial. Click the QuoteStream banner in the header or real-time quotes in the nav bar to get started building and managing your investments.
In this episode of the Planet Microcap Podcast, I spoke with Scott Felsenthal from unusualstocks.net. Scott, welcome to the Planet Microcap Podcast.
Hey, Robert. Appreciate you having me on.
It's great to have you. Okay, Scott. So to start off this episode of the Planet Microcap Podcast, I'd like to get a little bit more about your background and how you got interested in investing in microcap stocks. So the floor is yours, sir.
All right, Robert. Well, the story starts quite a number of years ago. I'm 32 now, and I believe that I was 13 years old when my dad opened a brokerage account for me and gave me some money to play around with. And really,
Wait, hold on real quick. So why did your dad open an account for you at 12, 13 years old? That sounds a little young, maybe.
Yeah, it is young, but I remember a conversation I had about him. I think one of his statements from his broker came in the mail and was asking him what it was, and he was explaining it to me a little bit. And with that week, I had a small account opened at Ameritrade, I remember, and we sat down and started talking about some companies, and he gave me some good advice where to put some money. I think Philip Morris might have been one of my first stocks, and my dad's a very, very patient dividend investor type of guy. So you know, for the first, you know, from 12 to 20 or so, I was, you know, in a lot of these dividend companies that my dad thought had a lot of value, and that's where I kind of picked up my initial knowledge about the stock markets and investing. And when I was in my 20s, I felt like I had learned enough, and I wanted to, you know, try the flip side and do some trading. And between college classes and everything else that goes on in the 20-year-old's life, I was, you know, trading stocks, and that continued all the way probably till a couple years ago when I got interested in microcap investing. And I guess the reason why the switch happened, and it's probably not a very common switch. It's a tough thing to go from trading to microcap investing, where you're very active, to where you're not very active at all. Is really because, you know, I got my law degree, came into the family business that I'm in now, and have very little time to sit in front of a computer screen all day. So I take advantage of the time I do have, study up on companies, talk to companies, and put some money in some companies, and not have to, you know, look at it every hour, 2 hours. You know, there's weeks that go by sometimes when, you know, I don't really get that, you know, focused into one of the companies that I own. We're always on top of the news that comes out. We're always talking to management and other investors here and there, but it's just not a constant, you know, glued to the screen type of atmosphere that the day trading was. So I think, you know, that's what forced my shift in investment styles. And so a couple years ago, all in on microcaps and stopped the day trading, and it's been a great experience.
So when you were trading, you were by yourself the whole time, or were you working with somebody on this?
No, this was just day trading in and out of my brokerage account, just ideas that I generated either on my own or talking with, you know, other investors that I had gotten to know in a little bit. But the trading was all within my own account and for me.
And then when you first got into microcap investing, it was all on your own.
That's correct. And I think what really, you know, flipped my interest there, not only that you didn't have to be glued in front of a computer screen 24/7, but being in a business myself, you know, I quickly got a good understanding of financials and what it takes to be successful in business. And coupled with my law degree, I kind of had to have a unique approach when evaluating microcap companies. I can look at it not only from a business owner type of a perspective, but also from a legal perspective as well. And you know, those two characteristics kind of blend together well and allow you to really thoroughly evaluate microcap opportunities.
So, you know, what was it that really made it sticky for you?
Yeah, great question, Robert. I think the primary driver for me was finding a way to shift away from trading to something that could, you know, that I could be involved in the markets but not have to sit at the computer 24/7 a day. And, you know, microcaps was certainly what I was drawn to, and I had a very, you know, some very early successes, which only, you know, fostered my interest level and got me really digging in for more. You know, I can vividly remember, it was actually one earlier this year that was a real, you know, I kind of eased into it over the last year and a half, and then at the beginning of this year, things really picked up. And one I can really remember well was a company called Staffing 360 Solutions. They are a staffing service provider, and they acquire smaller companies and raise money and keep acquiring and growing that way. And, you know, I kind of saw some good things happening, and I got in pretty early, and it was just a matter of months after I got in that they, you know, announced a positive EBITDA number, and the stock took off, I think, from about 30 cents up to about 75 cents. And that was a real good success for me, you know, based on the past year and a half of learning. So being able to get into companies, you know, when we can see and have a pretty good vision that they're heading in a direction towards profitability or some kind of positive cash flow EBITDA number, that's kind of my niche within the microcap space. I love finding those those companies and getting in when no one else is. So that was a great success for me this year. That, you know, my momentum's kind of built on that. Of course, I've had some failures along the way, like all of us have, and those have been tough lessons. But fortunately, was able to cap some of those losses at a reasonable level and learn from them and take those lessons and wrap them into, you know, successes. And we're in a bunch of good companies now that we're excited about. And it's just about finding the right thing early on when no one else is looking, and finding, you know, those unusual and undiscovered companies. And there's lots of ways to find them. But, you know, when we do find them, we like to build our position and kind of hold on unless the story changes, and just exercise some patience. And that's a pretty tough thing for a former trader to do. So I've had to, you know, certainly learn about conviction and talk to plenty of other mentors around me and understand that the only way you're really going to reap the benefits of the investment that you put so much time into learning is holding through the ups and downs. And once you learn to do that, good things happen.
Okay, so Scott, so you would consider yourself an expert on microcap investing, correct?
Well, that's not a word I would use because we're always learning and always getting better at what we're doing. But I think I've come a long way in a two-year period of time of several trials and tribulations, and have reached a level now where I'm confident in sharing my process and idea generation with others.
Okay, so, you know, you're doing the trading on your own. You got started in microcaps a little bit on your own. So tell me, how did this experience lead into unusualstocks.net? And who are you doing that with?
Good question. So I knew from, you know, probably my college years that I always wanted to have some kind of stock service. I mean, at the time it was more trading, so I guess that's kind of where my head was. But as I evolved more into microcap investing, it really became an ideal time for me as my confidence grew and as some of my results have panned out nicely to be able to take it to another level and help others and kind of build a small community of serious, like-minded microcap investors. And I was fortunate enough several months ago, around the time we launched the site, to come across who is now my partner, Matthew Diodario. He's a Canadian. He's 22 years old. He is a very young, bright guy. Got started investing really not too long ago when he was 20, but he's had several years with positions that have been up 100%+, and he's just a very, very mature kid who knows how to talk to management of companies and knows how to understand financials. He taught himself that process. He doesn't have a financial background. He's actually an engineer by education. So I like that. I like that in a young guy that, you know, has the drive and motivation to really understand what he's invested in, and he knows the companies he's in like the front and back of his hand. And it was a nice fit for me. You know, particularly I can focus a little more on the U.S. side, and he can focus a little more on the Canadian opportunities. So it's a pretty good match.
So, you know, from the beginning to where you are now, you know, what are certain things that you learned and that you've now applied to your own due diligence process, then that you've then been able to shift over with your newsletter service with Unusual Stocks? Can you go through that process?
Yeah, I think a couple of key things that I've learned is early on in the microcap investing that I, you know, started with, I wasn't talking to management. I was talking to other, you know, investors, which is always fine. But you've got to, you know, investors, particularly young investors in the microcap space, have to understand that, you know, you can talk to others, but unless you have the conviction in the company, you're not going to be able to stick it out and hold through the ups and downs of a, you know, a company cycle. So, you know, really developing that conviction and by doing that, you know, talking to management, really, you know, getting a good gut instinct on the business through them is so, so important. Something we stress through some educational posts with our members all the time. But, you know, you've got to develop, whether it's with the investor relations team at a company or the CEO, president of the company themselves, you've got to have a you know, a direct line to them, and you've got to be able to have a forum to ask questions and to form your opinions off of, you know, instead of just talking to other investors. So that's number one. And number two is I think what's taught me the most is never get arrogant or cocky about a position, because once you do, it certainly finds a way to turn itself against you. So, keeping your position sizing, at a level where it's bearable to you, but also being heavily concentrated is a fine line. You got to kind of find a balance for that fits your own investing style. But I would say those two things are something that I learned early on that I've had to really apply. And you get measurable success when you're able to, apply those things.
Let's talk about some of the things that you look for at unusual stocks that you use when you're doing your due diligence process. What are some of the key points that you look for in different companies? And this is an important question because, there's other newsletters out there that are doing similar stuff to you. So, I want to know what's different with unusual stocks, because if it's all the same, then we're talking about the same, 5, 10 quality companies, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but still, what's the due diligence process at unusual stocks?
Yeah, great question, Robert. And first of all, let me step back and just talk about Matthew, who's my partner, Matthew Diodario. He is, the expert on the Canadian side for our service. I focus a little bit more on the U.S. companies. He focuses more on the Canadian side, and he's going through company filings on a daily basis. And I'm doing similar things on the U.S. side, just trying to dig out, what looks like interesting opportunities. And once we find those interesting opportunities, we start going through filings, all the way back 5 years back, kind of in a reverse chronological order. Most importantly, what that does is allows us not only to get a feel for the company, but to evaluate their progression of the business through time and whether management's accomplished what they've set out to do. Because if they've accomplished what they said they were going to do 5 years ago, then we're pretty confident. Certainly gives us more confidence than that what they say they're going to do now, they're more likely to achieve in the years ahead. So that's certainly one piece of what we do. We look for recurring revenues, such an important factor in the microcap space. We want to make sure that the business is not capital intensive. We want to make sure the barriers to entry are pretty high so that someone can't just come along and start up in the business as well. And we want to make sure that the management team is willing to talk to us and willing to put some time into educating us on their company and what their vision is. And most importantly to me, is certainly that the executives and the insiders have significant skin in the game. Now those, to your point, those are all things that all these services are looked at, but what we do differently, I believe, is we don't limit our scope of finding companies. We look, I've been in companies in England before, in Australia. We concentrate mostly in the U.S. and Canada, but we don't rule out any industries. We look for value wherever it may be, then we dig deeper. Now there's some industries that we're less comfortable in, of course. For me, it's healthcare and, the resources area. It's a little more difficult to really understand, and a lot of the companies in the resource space, don't make it through some rough cycles. So we tend to stay away from those, but we always look at them. And I think one real distinguishing factor is we'll take a good hard look at unprofitable companies. A lot of investors out there in the microcap space makes them pretty nervous, obviously adds a lot of risk to the investment, but we're willing to do the work to see if we can put a thesis together that proves a pretty, pretty good pathway from unprofitability to profitability. Because if we can get in at those unprofitable levels and hang on until the company becomes profitable, that is where you're significant return is. And also just to add, we're looking at a couple things with the service that I think is going to make it very unique in the space, and I hope in the next month or so we'll be able to announce that, but it will appeal to a much broader microcap investor community than what we necessarily appeal to at the moment. So I'll be happy to update you on that when that comes to fruition.
For sure. And, I'm going to throw, it's not really a curveball. It's more of like a split finger fastball.
All right.
In that, you know, you brought up, I kind of asked you a little bit earlier about, you know, what kind of got you into the microcaps. And obviously, you know, you get those one or two wins and you're hooked, you know. But I think for educational purposes, and it would be kind of fun just to reflect and to make, and what you learned from it and how you grew. You kind of gave a couple things to look out for. But let's say, for instance, you know, what's, you don't have to name the company, but let's give an example of maybe a failure that happened and, you know, what you learned from that.
Sure. Always happy to talk about those. It's not the, obviously not the easiest to talk about, but you're right. It's what you learn from. And just thinking back quickly, one of my first failures was a technology company in the U.S. What I thought was a pretty decently funded company. They were in the kind of the workout and fitness space where they created apps and digital applications. And there was talk of Apple Watch coming down the pipeline, you know, a year and a half ago. And thought if I could get in this company early and Apple Watch comes along and it's a huge success, you know, these technologies could tie in nicely. Well, you know, this was a year and a half ago when I was getting into this company. I didn't do the type of due diligence I did now. So, for example, I never talked to management. I do remember trying to reach out to the company's executive team and never got a response 3-4 times in a row. To me, that's a huge red flag. I should have walked the other way, but I didn't because I was, you know, arrogant and thought for sure this is going to be a winner and, you know, built up a pretty sizable position in it. And, you know, at the end of the day, it just didn't materialize, and I got out with a little bit of a loss, a fairly significant loss, maybe 30-40% of the capital. So that was a hard lesson to learn, but certainly one that has taught me well. You know, if you want to do well, not only if you want to do well, but if you want to be sure you can preserve capital, you got to do the due diligence process, and you can't. There's so many companies out there, you can't, you know, be so high on a company and not have done the due diligence process, because, you know, there's so many companies out there that you can go and talk to. And if one company won't talk to you for whatever reason, just go the other way. There's always other opportunities. And I think I've embraced that mentality that's allowed me to move on much quicker than, you know, what I would have done a year and a half, 2 years ago.
One thing that, you know, I've learned from this conversation also when looking at your website is that you're looking for stocks that are, one, unusual, but it's more tied into the idea that they're undiscovered. So how do you go about finding these ideas and how are they, how do you categorize them as undiscovered? You know, what does that mean?
Sure. You know, I've always enjoyed reading and finding and learning about companies that are, you know, they're either doing something really unique or they are in an industry that is so young and infant that not many people know about it. And that part of the finding and the searching and the learning about companies is really interesting to me. I mean, there's several names in our portfolio that are invested by many across the microcap space, but there's some that are in industries that are just so far off people's radars. For example, something that's really, you know, interested me the past few months is the whole underwater unmanned vehicle industry, which is a huge industry and one that arguably is where the drone market was, you know, 10, 15 years ago. There's this whole underwater market developing, which is going to be, you know, we think is going to be huge. So there's, you know, that to me is what I would call unusual, because very few people are talking about it, and there's opportunity in sectors like that. And, you know, that's what makes investing fun in my mind. It's learning about things you haven't already learned about. You know, it's one thing if it's another technology company that's got some cloud computing software, and, you know, that's all great, especially if they can generate the returns you're looking for, but another thing to learn all about a whole new industry out there that could be on the infancy of a huge boom. And if you can find those companies and do so in a prudent way, you know, that's where the unusual comes in for me, and that's what makes it exciting. And another thing is, you know, I'm a little different probably than a lot of microcap investors. I'm not a MBA. I'm not a, you know, accounting degree background. I'm a corporate executive who's had to, you know, learn the accounting side of business, And I have, and I've been able to apply that to the investing side of what I do. But, you know, a lot of it's gut instinct, and you talk to people and you talk to management and you learn about industries and you learn about people running the company and you make that gut instinct. Obviously, the financials have to give you confidence as well. I don't want to undermine that fact, but that I think we do a little, for me, my method's a little different because it's not 100% financial balance sheet driven. Yes, that's important. Yes, that is, you know, at the end of the day, that's that's what matters. But getting to the point of pulling the trigger to invest in a company, to me, is not all about financials. It's about having a good gut feel that the people running that company are going to do what it takes to get the company to, you know, a very good place. And if it's interesting and unusual in nature, that's even more exciting to me.
Dude, where did you read about underwater unmanned vehicles? That's insane.
I know it is, and it's a you know it's a real deal. It's navies around the world are using it, are using these things to, you know, look for mines on the bottom of oceans for defense reasons. There's companies using stuff like this to look for minerals on the bottom of the ocean. So it's a huge industry, and when you think about it, 70% of the earth is water. you know, that kind of makes the thesis pretty you know, exciting. And the products that are produced for that kind of stuff are expensive. And a couple of orders can change a company's you know, balance sheet overnight and size overnight. So we found a company, and we're going to hang on and see if we can enjoy the ride. But it's definitely exciting.
But like, where do you read about that? I mean, were you watching? I know there's the show on Discovery that I know my parents watched, the where they mine for gold in the ground in like the colder waters of Alaska. Were you watching that and got the idea? I mean, talk to me.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I think I was reading something about the Navy investing in some kind of underground water surveillance system, and just kind of got me thinking and started doing research. But you're right, there's the With information at our fingertips these days, ideas come to you from every direction. If there's shows on TV, on the Discovery Channel, for sure, those will give you, kick off some pretty good ideas. But I think, you know, for me on that one, I was just reading an article and said, wow, this is interesting, and started searching the space a little bit and learning, and, you know, led me to a small Canadian company, and that's where we parked some money. So we'll see what happens.
So I'd say the moral of that story, ladies and gentlemen, is, you know, just keep your eyes and ears open. You read an interesting article, who knows? Ask the question, you know, is there an industry here? Is there a business here? I mean, let's, you know, maybe just think about it a little bit more critically than it's just like, oh, that's cool. You know, there might be more to it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Never discount anything until you look into it. That's what allows you to find things that others aren't finding. You know, taking the leap of faith and doing the research, and when you see some crazy news story out there and it spurs some thought in your mind, go do some digging to see if there's opportunity there.
All right, Scott, so we're about to wrap up. Let's end with some parting thoughts, maybe some last bit of wisdom that you'd like to impart on our audience, maybe some more information about where we can find out about Unusual Stocks, both the website and on social media.
Sure. You know, I guess the parting advice I would leave for potential and current microcap investors that are fairly new to the game is, you know, don't let it intimidate you. Talk to these companies. You know, you'll find CEOs and executive management teams that welcome the opportunity to get their story out in the investor community. And I think it's so important that you try, because if they don't reciprocate, that's usually a pretty good sign to run the other way. So that, you know, that's some good advice I would offer. But just don't, you know, there's a huge community around that wants to help you and wants to help you learn. And sure, Twitter's one way, but there's services like ours that you can, you know, be a part of a group and get daily, you know, multiple weekly alerts that tell you a little bit about what's going on in the markets and what's going on with our portfolio companies, so you don't have to worry about it. And yeah, that's what we enjoy doing. We put out educational articles to help help folks understand things that a year and a half ago I was struggling with. You know, Matthew puts out great educational and research article pieces, and we try to keep things fresh and keep it fun, and we'd love to have new members join us and learn, you know, learn what their backgrounds are. We have some members that are similar situation to me that just kind of converted to microcaps within the last year. We have some that are, you know, $600,000-$700,000 portfolios that they're just looking for idea generation that we can help them with as well. So your listeners can certainly check us out, unusualstocks.net. There's some samples there, and we'd be happy to connect anyone with some current members if they want to get some feedback on the service. But we're loving what we're doing. We're loving interacting with our members. You know, there's competition out there, but we don't necessarily view it as that. We're just another outlet for great ideas and great investment opportunity discovery. And we're different, and we do things differently, but we care about our members the most, and we're always looking to bring some value to where we can. So that's kind of what we're about, and we're excited about the future.
And where can our followers go and follow you on Twitter?
They can go to @unusualstocks, and then Matthew, the best thing to do to follow Matthew, he puts out some good content as well. It is @MatthewD_98. So that is where you can follow Matthew, and you can follow me @unusualstocks. And we look forward to connecting with some new folks.
Scott, thank you so much for coming on to the program. I really appreciate it.
Robert, thanks for having me, and keep up the good work.
Will do, man. Talk to you later.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you all for tuning in to the Planet Microcap podcast, and thank you, Scott, again for coming on to the program. You can access the podcast by going on to stocknewsnow.com under podcast, go to podbean.com and search Planet Microcap podcast, or on iTunes and search Planet Microcap podcast. Stay tuned for the next episode of the Planet Microcap podcast, where we'll have our next week in review and have another exciting guest to discuss all things microcap. If you have any questions or comments about the podcast, please send me an email at info@stocknewsnow.com. I'd love to hear from all of you. This podcast has been brought to you by SNN Incorporated, publishers of stocknewsnow.com, the official microcap news source, and the Microcap Review magazine. I'm your host, Robert Kraft, and thank you again for joining me on the Planet Microcap podcast. Have a great week, everyone.